This episode of Travel Today with Peter Greenberg is brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio information and entertainment. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Sign up today at www.audiblepodcast.com/travel today to get a free audiobook and 30-day trial.
It's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one travel news journalist. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, your travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
Hi, everybody. Peter Greenberg here, and welcome to the podcast that's done from a different location around the world every single week. One day Canada, the next day Thailand, then New York, London. You just never know. This week we come to you from Healdsburg, California, and the Hotel Le Mar, or Le Mars. I gotta tell you, this is such a cute place. I'm not just talking about the hotel, I'm talking about the community. It's walkable. In fact, I insist you walk it. It's always a voyage of discovery. It's manageable. Great food. Of course, you know where we're coming from. Great wine, great cheese, even great meat, especially cured meats they do up here as well.
Joining me now is someone I've known for a number of years. A writer from New York originally, but he's been in Healdsburg now for 11 years. So who better to tell me what's going on than Matt Villano? How are you, man?
I'm great, Peter. Thanks for having me.
I mean, a New York transplant. You moved to California, then to Seattle, then you came back. Why Healdsburg?
Well, originally we had come here because my wife took a job at the junior college down in Santa Rosa, and she got the job. We were living down on the peninsula south of San Francisco, and as soon as I knew that Santa Rosa Junior College was in the running as a future employer of hers, I said, you know, there's one town up there that is pretty awesome, and this was 11 years ago, and it was Healdsburg, and we came up.
So I got to ask that question. Yeah. What made it that awesome 11 years ago?
Well, I mean, it was the only place in this part of Sonoma County where you had what I like to call the trifecta: great wineries, great restaurants, and a whole bunch of stuff to do outdoors. And it was also the kind of small town where I knew I wanted to raise my kids, and luckily my wife agreed. And so we didn't set our sights anywhere else. We knew this is where we wanted to come. We only looked at houses in this community. We were unfortunately, we were stupid enough to buy our home just before the market crashed. So it took us a couple years to make right on that, but I don't regret our decision. And
hung in there.
We hung in there, and I don't want to live anywhere else. I mean, I'd be happy if we stayed here for the rest of our lives.
What's the thing that, other than the trifecta, because you're not the only person to figure that out. So the challenge, if I were living here, for me would be, how do you protect yourself from over-tourism?
Yeah, it's a big problem that we're faced with right now. Don't want to go too far down the rabbit hole, but I think the biggest issue for our community is equity, housing equity. It's coming up with affordable places for the people who work in our restaurants, the people who work at our wineries, and the people who run our local adventure travel outfitters, homes they can afford so that they can actually live in the community as well as work here.
I mean, you do run the risk of pricing yourself out of the market.
Yeah, that's a big problem. And it's a problem that we're trying to solve. I think we've sort of approached the problem in fits and starts. And luckily now there are some homes that are more affordable that are being constructed and should be coming up onto the market in the next couple of years.
You've lived here for 11 years. Stupid question. Have you been to all the wineries? No.
No. And I don't know if it's possible. You know, some of the best places to taste local wine these days actually are in warehouses. There's a great spot down in Windsor that opened recently. It's called Grand Cru, and it actually is a place for a number of smaller boutique wineries that don't have their own tasting rooms yet, but still want to taste wine. It's a place for them to go and book appointments with some of their customers. And I mean, there's six or seven wineries under that one roof down there. So, you know, I'm sure there are wineries in our community that I don't even know about. And I've been writing about this town for more than a decade.
Same thing with restaurants. No, you've been to all the restaurants.
I've been to most of them. And, you know, there's a restaurant for every palate here and for every price point. I mean, we've got one of the greatest and most exciting restaurants in all of America, two blocks from where we're sitting right now. It's called Single Thread.
What makes it so exciting?
Well, really what makes it so exciting is the creativity behind the food there. Chef Kyle Connaughton trained in Japan. He perfected and sharpened his craft in England. And he and his wife, Katina, are just approaching food in a way that nobody else really has. They really are spotlighting and making their own some concepts in dining that you only find in Japan, and yet they're putting a California Sonoma County spin on those to create something really special and exciting. They've got a bunch of Michelin stars. But the one issue for a lot of local folks is that to eat there, it costs $290 just for the meal. That's before the food pairing. So, you know, we've been there. We like that place. But at the same time, you know, we love getting pizza at Giorgio's.
It's almost amazing when you think about how many Michelin stars there are in Hillsburg.
I think it's 8.
Unheard of.
Yeah, that's pretty neat. And what's really great is that at least 2 of the places, I think most people could come here and not even visit. You know, one of them, Shed. Basically, we could throw a baseball from where we're sitting to this place. Perry Hoffman made a name for himself over at Etowah in the Napa Valley. Took a couple years to just, you know, hang out, sharpen his craft. And now he's running one of, I think, the most underrated and underappreciated restaurants in our whole town.
And when you go to that restaurant, what do you order?
You know, I try and order something that includes ingredients from what the owners over there, Cindy Daniel and Doug Lipton, call their home farm. I think it's something like 65 to 75% of the produce on the menu is grown there on their farm, which, you know, I know farm to table is a big deal these days, but very few restaurants actually use that much produce that is quite literally farm to table.
Not to mention it's their farm.
Exactly. And it's Perry has really done an expert job in making those items the stars of the show over there, but obviously doing so with his deft touch.
You mentioned Giorgio's for pizza earlier.
Oh, yeah.
How many different kinds of cuisine are actually in this town? Because, you know, the best Italian food I ever had was in Lucerne, Switzerland. Who knew, right? The best Chinese I had was in Amman, Jordan. How did that happen,
right?
Welcome to globalization. So what am I going to find that surprises me here in Hillsburg?
Surprising. I mean, I love our little Thai restaurant. It's called Thai Orchid. It's over in the Safeway Shopping Center. No one else in my family likes curry, so I do some takeout from there at least once a week. But you know what we need, Peter, is a good Jewish deli. I'm a New York kid, and we've got one guy in town who's making bagels. It's sort of a home delivery service, but it's not the same.
Well, first of all, no bagels are as good as 2 locations in the world, Montreal and New York, because it's the water.
That's what everybody says.
It is. You can't, you know, you go to Fairmount in Montreal or any bagel place in New York, we're done. So nobody should even attempt to do bagels west of the Hudson River.
Yeah. But in terms of surprising, my favorite place in town, it's not a restaurant in the sense that you can get a meal there, but it's an ice cream shop, an artisanal ice cream. It's called Noble Folk Ice Cream and Pie Bar. And not only are the flavors amazing.
Pie bar.
Well, it's great. You can get a slice of pie and then get it a la mode with this homemade ice cream. But the guys behind the place are really cool kids. They're young. They're hungry. Pun intended. There, they've got a cupcake shop in town, and they're really respectable, exciting members of our community. And so I couldn't recommend that place highly enough. My kids love the Lucky Charms ice cream there. So
sorry to hear that. Hey, bottom line is, listen to this voice. Thank you. Back to you now, Matt. I'm presuming they're making their own ice cream.
They are.
With a high concentration of my 2 favorite words, butterfat.
You know, I actually am not up to speed on sort of what goes in there, but I do know that the flavors are flavors that I've not had before. Like I mentioned Lucky Charms, it's made with the marshmallows of Lucky Charms cereal, and the ice cream itself, I believe, is the flavor of cereal milk. They're doing some really neat things with Asian flavors. They've got black sesame and strawberry miso. They used to have this Japanese...
Strawberry miso?
It's really yummy. Yeah.
Come on.
They used to have a Japanese purple yam that was just amazing. It's a great spot. If you haven't been over there, Peter, maybe that would help your voice a little bit.
Yeah, just what I need is miso strawberry. I'll pass on that right now. I'm a rum raisin, cherry vanilla, strawberry... Of course, caramel cone. If you're going the Haagen-Dazs,
okay.
Yeah,
I think they could hook you up with something good over there.
All right, what's the biggest surprise restaurant in town for you?
Biggest surprise restaurant in town. Well, you know, I love what's going on at the Brass Rabbit, which is a restaurant that's helmed by a great young new chef. Shane McAnally is his name. He's also the chef at Chalkboard, which is just behind the doors, just beyond the doors behind you. And he's doing really new and innovative spins on classics. So he's got a beef Wellington that's really interesting. And he makes the best burger in town. Which, you know, again, I think would surprise some people because people think, oh, burgers, let's go to one of the pubs. But it's a chain's place, and it's the kind of burger you could eat 5 or 6 nights a week and not get tired of.
Let's get out of the restaurant scene for a second and talk about the art scene. You have an Art After Dark program.
We do, yeah. And, you know, to me, what's great about this town is the sculpture situation. We've got some great sculptures, not only in Healdsburg, but up north of Healdsburg in Geyserville. The Voigt family has a foundation that has a bunch of sculptures on site, and I don't know how open to the public that property is, but there is a property that also has some sculptures that I believe they have public walks that people can sign up for as well.
But you see, that's the best part of this place called Healdsburg. You can walk it. You don't have to drive.
Certainly walkable. You can come up here, get a lift from the Santa Rosa Airport, and not get back in the car again until you're ready to head home.
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
Listeners of the show, you already know what I'm about to tell you. The very first place I always go when I'm coming to a new city, town, village, location is not the Chamber of Commerce. It's not the Convention and Visitors Bureau. It's the firehouse, because the men and women there, they've been in everybody's hotel. They've been in everybody's house. They've been in everybody's restaurant. Plus, they know where to eat. They've got it all. They are the best guides ever. And unless they're out on a call, they're happy to share that information. So it's my pleasure to welcome aboard the Healdsburg Fire Department Chief, Jason Boas. How are you, Chief?
I'm doing very well, thanks. Thank you for having me, and welcome to beautiful Healdsburg.
Yeah, well, listen, you're a native.
I am, yes.
Born and raised.
Born and raised in Sonoma County, that's correct.
20 years on the job.
That's correct, yeah.
We were talking earlier in the show, and we'll continue to talk about the fires that happened. Sure, that involved you guys.
It did.
On a mutual aid basis all over town.
Yes, absolutely.
I'm on a fire department where we mutual aid with 12 other departments, so we're always getting banged out. But in a situation like this, when you have kindling like you had wind, you had no rainfall, you had your work cut out for you.
We sure did. It was quite an event, and really, like you said, all that stuff kind of came into the alignment that night with the high winds were probably the biggest factor, the steep topography, the dry fuels, and the rate of spread of that fire was just something that we're not used to seeing in Northern California.
There was a fire not far from here many years ago when I was a correspondent for Newsweek called the Fire of Marble Cone up in Monterey. And because I was also a firefighter, they let me go in with the firefighters, not just as a journalist. And I honestly should not have gone in because I wasn't prepared for what I saw and what I experienced. When you tell somebody that a fire is moving at 2.5 miles an hour, that doesn't seem very fast. It's really fast. And especially if you have wind and the wind shifts, you can get easily trapped. And that's what happened to our team. We had to dig holes. We had to literally use the shovels and bury ourselves and have the fire come over us. Not a pleasant thing.
Yeah, no.
Right?
Right. That's not the kind of situation you want to get yourself
in. But when you add the wind factor in, anything can happen.
Yeah. And I'm very grateful and a little bit surprised that there were not any firefighter injuries or fatalities on any of the fires during that firestorm, specifically the Tubbs fire that our crews were on, because they were experiencing such rapid fire growth and spread, just trying to get people out of the way, that there were a lot of close calls, literally a lot of stories of people that didn't even know the fire was approaching until law enforcement or firefighters were pounding on their doors, waking them up and getting them out of the way as their yards were catching on fire.
And what people don't realize, and we've had it happen in our department as recently as last year, you see a fully involved fire and the wind picks up and a lot of fuel, dry, one ember can ignite somebody else's roof like that. And next thing you know, you have to give up territory. It's like a war. You literally have to retreat and just give up territory to save everything around it.
Right, yeah. And in the early stages of that fire, I mean, most of the night, it was, the focus was on evacuation. There wasn't really any firefighting. I mean, it's almost impossible to fight a fire under 70-mile-an-hour winds. You know, our number one concern in the fire service is always life safety, and that's what most of the early hours of that fire were. We're just trying to get people out of the way.
The optics of those fires, though, Chief, was that, or were, that all of Sonoma was destroyed, but it wasn't.
No, it wasn't, and I think it's important that we get that message out. I mean, obviously, there was a lot of concern about, you know, all the wineries burned down, all the vineyards burned up, but that's not the case. Of course, we lost a lot of acreage in the fires, but business, and we lost businesses too, but there are a lot of still businesses that are still thriving, you know, and there's no reason why people should think that Sonoma County got wiped out by that. You know, we're recovering well, and we're still up and running.
Now, your service mandate with your department is you're covering like 65 square miles?
That's correct. Well, the city of Healdsburg is about 4.5 square miles, but under contract with the county, we cover another 65 square miles just to the west and to the east of us.
Wow, that's a lot of territory.
It is. It's a pretty large territory to cover.
How many houses?
How many houses?
How many firehouses?
We have one fire station right now staffed right here in downtown.
And how many members?
13. And we have 13 paid and 21 reserve firefighters or volunteer firefighters.
Now we're talking, ladies and gentlemen, yeah. 74% of all firefighters in America are volunteer.
Right, and that remains the case here in Healdsburg. We have, like I said, we have 21 active reserve firefighters, and the function they serve for us is to, you know, anytime we have a fire, of course, they're to take out our second, third, fourth out piece of equipment, but they also cover the station for second calls in district. It's really, I don't know how we would make it through without them. They really provide the backbone to our department.
And my guess is they were all busy.
They are all very busy, yeah. And they're all, a lot of them are business owners here in town, students here in town.
Oh, listen, the guys in my fire department, the guys, listen to me, my God. The guys in my fire department and the women, they're the butchers, the bakers, the candlestick makers, the plumbers, the electricians. The biggest joke for me is when we get banged out and I got to go on a call, I finally find the plumber that can come over to my house at the end of it to fix something.
It's the same way here. We have a very wide skill set of people that come into the fire department, from people that know how to make wine, to people that know how to weld, to people that know how to work on cars, and, you know, like,
and all that,
you know,
and all that comes in handy in a fire, let me tell you.
It does. And as you know, we're all one big happy family.
I had an emergency in my house in New York where the pipes burst, and I wasn't in the house at the time. And I came back a half an hour later to find waterfalls coming through every wall and ceiling, and it was 0 degrees outside, 5 feet of snow on the ground. I knew if I called the fire department, the plumbers there knew where the mains were, and they saved the house.
Yeah, and we have some people that are electricians on the side, and I can't tell you how big of a help that is on some calls, as you know.
Oh, man, you have a fire, you better know how to cut off the electricity fast, right?
Right, absolutely.
All right, now let's get to the fun stuff.
Okay.
Where do you like to hang out in Healdsburg?
Well, that's a good question. I have a family of four, so I have four kids. I spend a lot of my time with my children.
On your one night out a week, where do you like to hang out?
You know what I like to do is I like to, if I can get some time with my wife and get a babysitter, we'll come downtown and we'll do kind of a progressive thing where we'll go to one place, have a drink. We'll go to another place, have some tapas or an appetizer. Maybe go to another place and have dinner, end up with ice cream on the plaza. So that way we get a chance to kind of hit some different businesses, walk around, see people we know. Maybe see a movie.
So basically the fire chief is sampling.
Yes.
Now, of all the places that you like, name those places.
Are you going to put me on the spot to name specific places?
Of course I am.
Places?
Absolutely.
Okay, well, it depends on what you like.
Well, you said tapas.
Okay, well, I'm a little hesitant because there's, you know, a lot of business owners in town, and you really can't go wrong in this town. It kind of depends on the environment you want. But if you're looking for more of a, I don't know, cultural, lively environment. Maybe Campofina is a good place to go if you're looking for a more kind of dining experience. My wife and I really like to go to Villette. But
Wait, when you go there, what do you order?
Well, I haven't been there in a little while, and they do change their menu around. So I try to order stuff that I don't see very often. If there's something unusual on the menu that I haven't tried, that's what I usually go for rather than a standard fare.
And how's the ice cream in town?
There's some great ice cream in town right on the plaza.
Really?
Have you found it yet?
Well, there are two words when I hear ice cream that scare me. You know what those two words are? Butterfat. Because the problem is, the higher the butterfat percentage, the more I'm going to like it, and the more I'm going to need to take a 7-hour nap.
If you are continuing on to another Southwest destination, please make sure that you check the monitors inside the terminal for your proper gate and flight information. If you are continuing on with another airline, we really don't care.
I am a passenger.
Audible.com has more than 150,000 titles and virtually every genre. So check it out for yourself. Sign up today at www.audiblepodcast.com/travel today to get a free audiobook and 30-day trial.
You take a look at Sonoma County and you give up counting the number of winemakers. It's just amazing. And whatever you want, you can find it here. You just need to take your time because it's an abundance of great stuff. My next guest, he's actually the owner of the Journeyman Meat Company. Of course, what did he come today with the show? Bottle of wine. Because, yes, he owns the meat company, but he's also a winemaker. Pizza Gazio, how are you?
I'm good, sir. How are you?
How long have you been doing the meat?
We started, there was a project started about 5 years ago, and formally we opened up last August, but there's a lot of work needed behind the scenes. So our production facility is here in Sonoma County, about 10 minutes north of Hillsburg, but the retail shop is here just one block over.
But your history is, your family came here in the 1800s.
Yeah, my great-grandfather was Eduardo Segazio, the founder of Segazio Family Vineyards. And the family sold back in 2011. It's with great owners. But my father, during that long history, my father taught me how to make salami. And so after the family sold the business...
Stop right there.
All right.
He takes you in the corner one day and goes, Pete, you need something, you need a passion. Have a bite of this.
Well, the old Italian families would always have the hog for after harvest. And so after the grape harvest, you'd slaughter the hog, you'd have fresh sausage, you'd smoke your bacon, and you'd also make salami. And so that's what we would do in the winter months.
You watched your dad do that?
Watched dad do it, and dad, throughout the years, would always tell me, Peter, one day I want you to learn how to make prosciutto. And so, you know... About 5 years ago, I did my trek to Italy, and I was lucky enough to be...
You became a prosciutto apprentice.
I was a prosciutto apprentice. I got to work with the Marini family. I've gone back every year in the middle of winter. February is a good month to travel because the wines are done with fermentation. The vineyards are asleep. It's a good time to go, and I would go and I would learn.
But all the hogs are here.
All the hogs here, yes. All of the salumi we make here, it's all from West Coast hogs, and it's made here in Sonoma County.
In the days when I used to eat meat, I was a salami fanatic.
That's why you got wine, because that was the rumor.
But I'm still a salami fanatic, even though I'm not eating it anymore. And the stuff that I liked the most was the really dry, hard salami that was hanging up there for weeks. How long do you actually hang one of those?
We go 30 days before we bring it into the shop, and then it's in the aging room in the shop. So it's upwards of 60, 70 days by the time that we're selling it. So it is pretty firm.
Is it possible to hang it up there too long?
You can go too far. And salumi has a living flora. It's a living probiotic entity that is going to continue to age and lose moisture depending on the environment that you put it in. And that is the... Salumi in a natural casing is really only perfect for about 1 week. So you really have to time it, or you have to take the casing off and cryovac it to stop it from losing moisture.
But of course, my philosophy is, with enough honey mustard sauce, cardboard's going to taste good.
you can go with that, but we prefer to time it.
No kidding. So when you're selling me in your retail store, and we'll get to the prosciutto in a second, the hard, dry, aged salumi, how long has it been hanging up there?
It's been hanging up there right around 70, 80
wow.
days.
So once you buy it at that point, it's time.
It's time.
Wow.
It's time.
And how much are you producing?
We're producing about 2,000 pounds a month. Because remember, when you make, you're going to lose 35 to 38% of your raw weight through dehydration.
Right.
So and that's
why it shrinks.
That's why it shrinks. So you can start. We have a chamber that 500 pounds. We will finish up at 317 pounds for every rack of salumi that we make.
How many different kinds of salumi are you making?
Oh, my production team feels we're making too many. We're making about seven. So, but
as an example,
we do a Bianco, a Rosso. You have to have a Finocchiona.
Explain the Bianco.
Bianco is made with indigenous. The Bianco and the Rosso are based upon the indigenous herbs here in Sonoma County for the last 100 years. Bianco has Chardonnay from Russian River. It has sage, fennel, rosemary, which all grow here in Sonoma County. The Rosso is juniper, anise, black pepper, garlic, and red wine, Zinfandel wine. So the Bianco and the Rosso are a little different than what you would see with normal salami that's out in the marketplace. These recipes were done really to reflect what's here in Sonoma County.
What's the most difficult one for you to make?
The most difficult one for us to make is the large diameter Parmigiano Porcini. It is the when you use Parmesan, chunks of Parmesan in the meat, what's neat about salami is you're fermenting and you're aging. It's very similar to wine. But when you're using chunks of cheese in the salami, it complicates the fermentation. And so that is the most challenging one to make sure that you get the proper bind. And so that one has been Madonna. That one's been tough. That one's been frustrating.
But if it works.
When it works, it's amazing. But there's been a couple of batches where it hasn't bound as well as it should, and those,
I got it.
They have to be let go. So
I'm sorry, but we're going to have to let you go. Hey, even though your family sold the wine business, you're back in it.
I'm back in it. It was important for me to teach my kids. So I make a small amount of wine with my children.
Under that label?
Do a San Lorenzo, and then we also have a Journeyman label. So that does Chardonnay and Pinot Noir. But this is a very, San Lorenzo is where my mother's side of the family is from.
I know what you're doing. Wine and salami pairings.
Yes, sir.
I'm shocked.
Riding along in my automobile, my baby beside me at the wheel, cruising and playing the radio, with no particular place to go.
He's a native of Sonoma County, and I'm already saying he's my idol because he still publishes newspapers.
Thank you.
I mean, please continue to do that. Ray Holly, the managing editor at Sonoma West Publishers. You got four.
We have four weekly newspapers. So we have one that covers West Sonoma County, Sonoma West Times and News, and then three weeklies in the North County, the Cloverdale Reveille, the Windsor Times, and the Healdsburg Tribune.
How old are the papers?
The Healdsburg Tribune is 153 years old this year.
Keep going.
Been coming out every week for 153 years. I'm not sure how to do the math on that. It was actually a daily for a while.
But the fact that it's still coming out to me is so great. I mean, I want to keep the post office. I want to keep libraries. I want to keep local bookstores. And I'm one of those guys, if you look in my bag, I get 16 newspapers and 35 magazines a day. I don't do anything online. I like holding it in my hand and reading.
Thank you. We appreciate that. We need more people like you.
Have you done online as well?
We had to go online. We didn't really lead our readers online. We followed them. They were already there. We've had websites for probably over a decade, but really got into it a lot more in the last year. We started a digital-first concept. The problem with that is all of us are old print dinosaurs. And so
stop. You're not a dinosaur.
Thank you.
Don't say dinosaur.
All right. We're proto-mammals. but we still operate on a weekly news cycle primarily.
But you've been around long enough to see so many of the changes here in the county.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, I grew up in South Santa Rosa when it was a quiet little town and you could ride your horse downtown and get a Frosty. I moved to Healdsburg 30 years ago next month.
Well, Healdsburg still reminds me of being that kind of town.
It is. It is. There's a lot of people here who've been here for multiple generations. We're experiencing quite an influx of newer people, folks who want to, who can really live anywhere in the world. They have the means, the resources. They come to Healdsburg wine tasting or because a friend told them, you know, after you go to Aspen, stop in Healdsburg next. And they decide they want to settle down here. So it's a really interesting melange.
Let me make a bold question for you. I'm suggesting that you don't want to become Aspen.
No, of course not. Aspen has to bus their workers in 3 hours one way in some cases. No, we don't want to do that. We are struggling a lot with providing workforce housing as the housing prices skyrocket in the community. But we're doing our best. We're working on it.
How do you manage the growth?
Oh, the voters manage the growth. In the year 2000, voters voted in a growth management ordinance. Even the author of the ordinance has agreed that it's had a lot of unintended consequences. We've not had a duplex or an apartment building built in the last 18 years, mostly high-end housing.
Well, to me, that's a plus.
It's not. It's we're missing some rungs on the housing ladder. You know, people who start out, you know how it works.
Entry level.
You live with your parents, and then you go live with some friends, and then you get your first place.
You're forgetting one thing. Then What's you go that? Back and live with your parents.
Right. A lot right. of them do. Well, in this inflated housing market, of course they do.
So what are your challenges right now in the county?
The challenges in the county, as I mentioned, are the high cost of living. We are growing faster than we can accommodate. We love our green belts. We have all the green areas around the cities protected by ordinance and by the voters. But then that implies you have to grow inside the city. And when we try to grow inside the cities, people don't like that either.
Well, I have to tell you, every time I land at the Charles Schulz Airport, I love it because it's sure. so manageable. It's a boutique. It's quaint. Everybody like operates like high. You know, the decent restaurant at the airport, it really is. And to me, that is the probably the best welcome you could give people anywhere in the world is what the airport says when you land there. And here it's like, get off the plane, walk 20 feet, hi, that's it.
Sure. But not everyone can afford to shop at a boutique. Some people need to go to Sears.
And, well, they better hurry up because Sears is over.
Right. Well, we're losing the mom-and-pop things, and that's a big issue for us. But we're working on it. You know, there's a lot of earnest people, a lot of smart people.
But if I'm walking around Healdsburg right now, I'm not seeing major chain stores.
We don't have any. There's a shopping center on the west side of town that has a lot of franchise stores and a couple of chains. But we actually have an ordinance preventing chain stores in the downtown. They call them formula businesses.
And I'm going to guess you also have a height ordinance.
Uh-huh, 50 feet.
That's it.
That's it.
So anything above four stories, you're in violation.
Right. Well, you don't get to build it. You don't get to be in violation. You don't get that far.
And that's part of what you like.
Sure. Yeah, everyone loves living in a small, manageable town that feels good. We have a lot of activists in town who are trying really hard to protect what they feel is their vision of Healdsburg. I like to say that everyone thinks Healdsburg was perfect the day they arrived and that their job is to resist any and all change after that.
Are you one of those people?
No. I think when I got here, there were still businesses on the plaza with plywood over the windows. The 80s was a tough time for Healdsburg. And I think we may have pushed a little too far on the cost of living and some of the other issues, but what's not to like about prosperity?
Now, could you now ride your horse into Healdsburg and get a Frosty?
I could probably go get an artisan cone.
But the horse would be okay.
Oh, they'd probably check to see if you were drunk. But we'll have horses here in about 3 weeks when we have our Future Farmers Fair Parade. That's a big annual event in Healdsburg.
So basically you have an ordinance here called RUI. Riding under the influence?
I would imagine there would be.
There's only one thing worse than that.
Yeah,
GUI, galloping under the influence.
Right. California Vehicle Code covers a lot of things.
What's the one thing you'd like to see absolutely preserved, other than the fact that you and I are both thinking alike about newspapers, to be able to maintain those?
We're already working on preserving things. We call the plaza our living room. You know, Harmon Heald in 1857 laid out these plots all around the community, and he took the most valuable acre of land that he had, and he gave it to us. He deeded it to the community, to the public, and we have that plaza. So we work hard to preserve it. We're preserving Fitch Mountain, which is right on the edge of the community. We just preserved our grand old wooden baseball grandstands that were built in the 1920s.
Now we're talking. You buried the lead.
Sorry about that.
How often are the games played?
The Prune Packers play there all summer.
The name of the team once again, please?
The Prune Packers.
You know, I there's a line there, and I'm not going there.
Okay.
But I love the name of the team.
I'm sure your listeners will go there.
Oh, they're already there. Trust me.
Hello and welcome to Alaska Flight 438. We'd like to tell you now about some important safety features of this aircraft. The most important safety feature we have aboard this plane is the flight attendants. Please look at one now.
I said we're in wine country, so how appropriate. My next guest, third generation and a family owner of the Pedroncelli Winery. And of course, her name has to be Julie Pedroncelli.
Yes, it is.
You know, I always love talking to winemakers who are owners because it's part of the culture here.
Yes.
It is. I mean, you know, Napa, there's Napa and there's the Mendoza Valley and there we could go the Loire Valley, but everywhere you go, as long as you keep away from the big corporations and talk to the people who really have the passion, you get a chance to understand the why and the process so that you can then, if you're lucky, understand and appreciate the product.
Right.
So let's talk about your family because it goes back how far?
Started with my grandparents, Giovanni and Julia Pedroncelli, who bought a piece of property in Dry Creek Valley in 1927, mid-Prohibition. And came with
prices were low.
Prices were low. It was a very good deal. And yes, $11,000 for 90 acres of land, including 25 acres of vineyard,
wow.
Shuttered winery, and a home.
So it was all set to go when?
As soon as we grew grapes until Prohibition ended. So we did that, and it supported the family. My grandparents had a young family when they arrived there, and then we went into the wine business once Repeal rolled around.
You know, it's like the story of Coors Brewery, Coors Beer. Mm. When Prohibition happened, what did they make? They kept everybody on payroll, and they made malted milk balls because they had all the malt.
Yes.
So you just grew grapes?
Grew grapes.
Grape jelly, grape jam.
I'm sure my grandmother made up many jars of that.
But then around 33
Repeal,
yeah.
And 34 is when we were able to go into the business of wine.
And you did.
We did.
Did you know anything about wine? Did your grandparents?
They came from a very northern part of Italy, so no winemaking there, but my grandfather learned from the ground up. He loved to farm, and that's, I believe, why he bought the winery.
And you already knew the climate was perfect.
It is, for many, many things, especially grapes.
Now, if you go to Oregon, all they want to talk about is Pinot Noir.
Mm-hmm.
What are we talking about at your winery?
At Dry Creek Valley, it's Zinfandel. For us, it's the first grapes that were planted on the property since 1904, and we've been growing Zinfandel there ever since.
So basically, you go with what you know.
Yes, indeed.
Let's talk about some more serious things. Mm-hmm. The optics over the last 6 months because of the fires.
Right.
Most of my friends, if I said I was coming up to Sonoma, they thought it was a war zone.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Couldn't be more different than that. There are certain areas, of course, that were affected. But up here in Hillsburg in Dry Creek Valley, it's just as scenic as it ever was.
And how many wineries were actually impacted?
There were very few. I can speak for Sonoma County, where I have, there's just a couple who were devastated. But other than that, a lot of the other wineries are still going along, still unaffected.
And yet, a lot of folks still think they can't come up here.
Right. We've received calls as recently as just a couple of weeks ago wondering if it was okay to make their travel plans. And we gave them the green light.
You gave them the green grape.
Green grapes, green light, green vineyards.
Have you ever tried to do wine in terms of a variety or a grape that didn't work?
You know, being on a piece of property for 90 years will help you learn what grows well and what doesn't. And Chardonnay was one. It was too warm at our end, and Pinot Noir. So we let the folks in Russian River Valley grow our Pinot Noir for us. And the same with the Chardonnay comes from the very south end of Dry Creek Valley, where it's cooler.
Now, the biggest challenge, I would think, of having a family-owned third-generation winery is still keeping it in the family.
Of course. And we had great examples of first and second generation with my grandparents and then my father, Jim, and Uncle John. They worked so well together. That legacy continues today with my sisters and my husband and brothers-in-law and even fourth generation.
We're talking kids.
Yeah, kids, they're coming. Yeah, we've got the fourth generation working there, my nephew, and I have a cousin who's part of the fourth generation who also works with us.
I'm always one of those people who believes, whether it's a hotel, a B&B, a winery, there are three things that have to be applied if you're going to visit that area. You go up on Sunday night, come back on Thursday, stay away from the weekend, right?
Yes.
Designated driver.
Mm-hmm. Most important.
Yeah. Yes. And then don't try to do too much too soon, because how many wineries are we talking about here?
Oh, Dry Creek Valley alone has over 75, and if you include all the wineries in Sonoma County, I think that goes up to about over 400, so you have a lot of choices.
You know, people, it's funny, there's Sonoma, there's Napa. Mm-hmm. When I go to Argentina, I go to Mendoza in western Argentina, 880 wineries.
Wow.
Impossible to deal with it,
mm-hmm.
And yet there's passion there.
Right.
So let's talk about your passion outside of your own winery.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you like to go to hang out, to have breakfast, lunch, or dinner?
Here in Hillsburg?
You bet.
Ah, Cousteau would be my favorite spot for breakfast. They're a wonderful bakery that is also multi-generational.
I knew you were going to say that because later in the show, we're going to have him on.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
Yes. And for lunch, you know, there's all these great choices downtown here in Hillsburg. One of my favorites is Cafe Lucia. It's a wonderful little Portuguese heritage spot, and it's a wonderful patio, so it's so fun to eat outdoors. There's also Hillsburg Bar and Grill, which is, I love their salmon salad. It's just delicious, and it's what I have every time I go.
We'll get to dinner in a second. You mentioned a Portuguese place.
Yes.
I knew all the Portuguese guys in San Francisco because that's where the fishermen were.
Of course.
So they must have moved a little south or a little north.
A little north. They did. They did. A nice little family set up there.
What do you order there?
Though their cod is excellent. I would highly recommend that.
Not the sardines.
Well, I'm not much. I like cod better than like sardines.
All right. Now let's switch to dinner.
Sure. For dinner, a lot of fun to go to if you want something light is Kinsmoke. That's a barbecue place, and it's a wonderful spot to get, you know, any level of barbecue you want. If you want to go a little more fine dining, I'd recommend.
I want to go back to the barbecue place.
Sure.
When I think of Healdsburg, I do not think of barbecue.
Well, these gentlemen put in a great spot, Brad and JC, and it's just a wonderful true smoked meats and all long cooked, and it's just delicious.
Okay, now you can go to fine dining. By the way, I hate the words fine dining. You know why?
Yes.
Because every time I go someplace, they want to show me their fine dining as opposed to their crappy dining.
Oh. All right. For delicious dining, how about you go that way? Villette. Villette is a wonderful spot. Dustin and his brother are running a great spot there, and it's just one of my favorite spots.
Now, in certain cities, of course, fine dining means you got to dress up.
This is
not here.
Wine country casual.
Yeah.
So you can, yeah, don't have to worry too much about that.
Just expensive jeans.
Yeah. Sure.
Why not? I know that. Now, let's get you out of your winery again. What wineries do you like?
Ah, what are some of my favorites? I think, well, I like Knoll. Knoll is a wonderful little family-owned place in Dry Creek Valley. You'll find Frick, who is right around the corner from us, and he specializes in Rhone varietals for 40 years. He just picked that, and he has run with it. Alexander Valley Vineyards out there in the valley is a wonderful spot to visit and one of my favorites. So it's just fun to go outside sometime and taste what we call other people's wine.
And you do.
And we do.
You're not mystery shopping. You're just doing it.
I'm doing it for the fun. Mm-hmm.
Your production is still limited?
We make about, we're at the big end of small is how I like to describe our production.
All right. Julie Petrocelli and basically the third generation family wine owner of Petrocelli Winery.
Yes. It was a pleasure.
Hello? This is your captain speaking. There is absolutely no cause for alarm.
Get your motor running. Head out on the highway. Looking for adventure.
I would like to say, and especially applies now, we've saved the best for last. It's dessert time.
Dessert time.
It is. That's Will Seppi, the president of the Costo French Bakery right here in Healdsburg. You've been here how long?
Me personally?
Yeah.
About 10 minutes. No.
No, come on.
Bakery itself, 1923. Our family moved here 1978 from Southern California.
So I'm going to just say one word for you. Butter.
Butter. Everything's better with butter, and we use a lot of it. A lot of butter every day. Laminated croissants, make all of our laminated doughs with it.
So the croissants are not only flaky, they are really buttery.
They are really buttery. Absolutely. In fact, maybe I should run out of here and go get some.
In about 5 minutes, I'll make you go out.
All right,
somewhere.
Done deal.
Okay, fine. But here's my question. Can you explain to me words that were not in our lexicon 10 years ago that now everybody's using because it's not necessarily a medical reason. People think they just need to say it, like gluten-free.
Right, gluten-free. We are not gluten-free. We have extra gluten. In fact, a lot of our products have a lot of gluten in them.
Then I want you to change the name of the bakery.
Yes, sir.
Ready?
Yep.
Gluten for Punishment.
There we are. We can do it.
Come on, don't you love it?
I love it.
You know what? You could brand that.
I'm sure we could take it across
really
the world.
What you should do is just have a branded item there calling it Gluten for Punishment.
I like that idea.
And you know what? You'd sell out.
We might every day.
But you made a conscious decision not to do that, right?
Correct. We did.
Why?
I take that the gluten-free thing very seriously. I have known a number of people with celiac disease.
And you're absolutely right about that.
And it's not something to be, I feel for those people. Literally, a little crumb here or there can send them into tailspins for days on end. So
exactly. It's the same with my friends who have the peanut allergies. I've seen many of my friends nearly die.
Yep. Yeah. And it's important. So we know what we do well, and gluten-free is not one of them.
So you have a warning sign in your bakery.
Well, it says bakery when you come in. So we bake. We use flour. We use a lot of flour, a lot of butter.
Would you say you use more butter than anybody else?
I would say we use quite a bit more butter than the average business or average household, for sure.
Now, is there a kind of butter that you use?
We use a couple different butters. Produced here locally by Clover Stornetta Farms down in Petaluma area. They're one of our large vendors that we buy our butter from. Gets incorporated into our products.
You say many different kinds. I'm an idiot about this. So walk me through what works and what doesn't.
Well, water content in the butter, some things that we look for. And our pastry chefs and bakers evaluate all those things when they're making product and coming up with new product periodically.
Stop right there. Yep. What's your newest product?
Newest product we are working on right now, a Nutella-based croissant. So that's not even on the marketplace yet, but I got to try one the other day, and it was very good.
Now, every time I have a chef on the radio show, I always ask them a similar question to what I'm going to ask you.
Uh-oh, this ought to be great.
What did you try that you thought, everybody's going to love this, and it tanked?
Good.
And wait, and the second question, of course, is what did you try? He said, do we have to do this? It sucks, and everybody wants it.
And it goes off the chart,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So we have this rolled item we call a mocha Florentine. People love it. My personal, not favorite. It's filled with a mocha buttercream. Very flavorful. That buttercream is very, very rich in there.
Do you provide a stretcher?
You need one, I think, after you have that.
Yeah.
In fact, I'll have to see if I brought one of those. If not, I can go get one.
Oh, God.
And those are dipped in dark chocolate as well.
Of course they are.
So a lot of, there's quite a bit of sugar content in that. And again, not very candid, not top on my list, but top seller in the bakery.
Okay, and the one you thought that was going to be the top seller, completely went to the dumper.
This ought to be, let me think about that one for a moment here. That's a great question. I'll ponder that while we're going through.
Okay, you got it.
Up.
But I'm not going to let you off until you tell me.
I figured as much.
But you're still a small family-run bakery.
We are. We've mom and dad, bought the business, I should say, back in 1981. Dad learned how to bake bread from John Costo, and mom sold the bread on the front counter, and that's how it all started. And they slowly grew.
What kind of bread?
Sourdough French bread is our main staple. That's what we've been well known for many, many years. So
with a thick crust?
Thick crust on it. Very hearty crust. So we bake those breads on a hearth oven with some steam injection that goes around them to develop that crust. And today our bread process has evolved. A lot of our breads we do today are two-day process where we use a long fermentation, natural starters or sponges go into that. The bread formed in a loaf sits in a refrigerator for 18 hours, 24 hours, and then it's baked off. And that develops a profile.
Now, I got to ask you this question because in many countries around the world, I check out the bakeries, but I want to find out if I show up at 11 o'clock at night, do I get it right out of the oven?
You get it right out of the oven.
Are you open at 11 o'clock at night?
We are not open at 11 o'clock at night. Healdsburg's a smaller town.
I know that, yeah.
Yeah, so we have a little bit of a challenge getting people through the door there at 11 o'clock.
But your stuff doesn't have a long shelf life.
No, our one-day shelf life.
That's it.
Yeah, we pride ourselves on baking fresh daily.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Catch us each week as we broadcast from a new location somewhere around the world.